Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, what's going on?
Tom, I'm very well. I'm not bad at all. You came in strong there.
Very cool. That means you got your headphones up loud.
No, well, we actually, Robert's here as well, my business partner, and we do this like a radio show, so we actually don't wear headphones when this is on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're like a radio show. Like I say, we sort of have a double act here, but don't worry. It's very natural.
No, that's cool. But how do you guys have it set up? So, I mean, you can't just have me playing in the open because there would be a lot of feedback and I don't hear it.
Yeah.
Just off the microphone, Tom.
Yeah, we have you playing in the open.
Really?
Yeah. We just use a Yeti microphone and then just here in a MacBook Pro, and that's it. Simple as that.
We're just cocooned in a small bathroom inside the shower unit, Tom. It's dead easy.
In a bathroom?
No, I'm only joking.
I was going to say, is that where you run the business from as well?
Yeah, absolutely. we've got a little office here. We're in Robert's house here, but we also have another office, an actual office that we work from generally. A couple of days a week, but we're not there today. We're just sort of hanging around today.
You have an online business. Why do you need so many offices?
Well, we're an online business, but we're not one of those online businesses. Yeah,
we don't operate out of the attic.
we like having a decent office. It's good to have.
Tell me the difference between your business and those online businesses.
Most online businesses don't make any money.
that's for sure. I think it's...
we're joking, by the way.
I think the likes of the online side of the business in terms of online sales of physical products, you know, we have kind of moved away from that, let's say, an attic setup whereby, you know, it's very much trying to trim costs at every possible location, whereas we have in the past gone out, got our warehousing together and everything like that. So we've sort of merged old school with new school. And then once we were able to refine the process of the warehousing, we completely outsourced that and went back to an office again.
Yeah, but and also I would say if you work from home all the time or a cafe all the time, that's fine. Like I work from cafes often, but at the same time, when you have an office, it's a place of work. You can go in there, have your whiteboard, draw up your ideas. I mean, we're running a couple of companies now, so we kind of need to have somewhere we can have like a war room, as we would call it.
Cool. So you're definitely past the bootstrapping phase.
Yeah, we'll probably do with our companies, like I'd say combined revenue this year would be somewhere in the region of $2.5-3 million or something like that.
How many companies are you running? Can you walk me through the different companies? Because the only one I've seen is the Marketplace Superheroes.
Yeah, so the other company we run is an Amazon sales company, in that we sell physical products on Amazon in 7 countries. And so that's another company. And we don't really talk about that company all that much for reasons to do with Marketplace Superheroes. Essentially, the problem is that if you talk about your Amazon seller name and all that shit, you're going to end up with people coming in, copying your products and diluting your products and all the rest. So we can talk a lot about our Amazon company. We just don't talk about the actual seller name for a number of reasons. Yeah. But then we also have Marketplace Superheroes. But within Marketplace Superheroes, there's actually multiple services that we offer that are almost like separate companies. We've got a software tool called Accelerator Tools, and inside Accelerator Tools we've got something called Accelerator Freight, which is like basically we do freight for Amazon sellers internationally, getting their products from China to the US, China to Europe through our software, and Accelerator Office in US and the UK. And that is an accountancy service, outsourced accountancy service for Amazon sellers internationally as well.
So, yeah, those are very different types of businesses. What's the staff like? How many people do you employ?
Not very many, actually. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 staff members and two of us.
How do you separate the time when you're going to work on which business?
So the way to do that is you got to talk about not multiple streams of income, but you got to look for multiple teams of income. So we build teams around the various projects we have. And also we have a big push towards putting ourselves out of a job as quick as we can by systemizing as many processes as possible.
I think as well, we've taken the approach of, you know, whenever myself and Stephen are getting together, we know exactly what hat we've got on for that particular time period.
Yeah. So we sort of split up our days as well. And certain days of the week, we'll do certain things for a company, that kind of deal.
And there's synergy between them all. I know they sound extremely different, but there is definitely a line that runs the whole way right through them, which is similar.
Well, they all serve the same customer.
Yeah.
I would imagine. So Marketplace Superheroes is like the funnel where you, right, maybe like a tripwire kind of, because I mean, the people are paying to get in and then you get them into the other services, which is the upsell. So you can actually lose money on getting that first customer in and make money on the back end.
We actually don't.
Yeah. I don't believe I mean, you could.
Well, you could, but it's not something we don't necessarily always look for maximum customer acquisition because they're not very qualified customers. We look for as highly qualified customers as we can get because of the specific nature of what we sell. And then we bring in the services and everything else. And I wouldn't classify them as an upsell, actually. Yeah. Classify them as a continuity program attached to our product.
I think as well, what we've done with the services and software is that we've analyzed where there's a potential, you know, pitfall for people or somewhere that they get their wheels spinning and they can't move any further because they don't have the expertise in, say, the actual importing process or in the old accountancy stroke tax side of things. So we've brought in, you know, these particular services to take care of that wheel spinning that happens to allow people to get over that particular hurdle and move forward with the process.
Cool.
Yeah, and I like that feedback is really hard.
Really?
Yeah, I'm hearing myself really hard.
Okay, that's weird.
Okay.
Let's turn you down.
Yeah. So, yeah, the one thing I find funny is that when I talk to a lot of people is, and I'll mention some kind of a thing that this is you're upselling or you're doing an affiliate and everyone's switching that name, right? It's the same thing, but no, this is not a sales funnel. This is a buyer funnel. No, we are not an affiliate. We're a marketplace. I always find it really funny in the online space how people are being a little defensive and like, no, we can't think of it that way.
No, I'll tell you what, I have no problem thinking of it in the older style internet marketing terms. I just don't think it's an accurate representation of what we're like. I don't think it's an upsell. Like, we do have an upsell that we're working on. Like, that would be, you know, a premium mastermind. I would consider that an upsell. But I know what you mean. Like, it's just like at our point of sale, we wouldn't try and upsell somebody necessarily to a freight or a freight service or an office service. Necessarily, because it just wouldn't work in the funnel. But I know what you mean. A lot of people are getting like that because they, like, people don't call it tripwires anymore. They call them welcome mats. And all.
Oh, I haven't heard that one. I like that.
I know exactly what you mean. Ryan Lee calls it a welcome mat. So I get what you mean. But at the same time, I just felt like it's a continuity program is a little more accurate representation of the services, really.
Why did you guys start it in the first place? I would imagine you knew how to make money from Amazon or e-commerce before.
Yep.
Like, what made you want to go from, okay, I'm making good money with this, I can open more shops, to now I'm going to start dealing with different customers and teaching them how to do the same thing? I just want to know the reason why. Yeah.
No problem. So the reason is quite simple, twofold. The first one is that we felt the quality of education, actually I'm going to say threefold, the quality of education out there for Amazon sellers was very, very poor. Most people don't understand costs and how to actually calculate profitability and how to scale the business successfully and how to also forecast stock accurately and that kind of stuff. Key business building metrics, really. So that's one thing. Second thing is we saw an opportunity to actually service these people with better software and actually teach them how to do it properly from Robert's 17 years experience and my 5 years experience combined. And the third part of it is, like, 5 years ago, before I started actually in this world of running my own business and stuff like that, I was trying to start a business for a long time. And I'd studied in college. I didn't finish college, but I was very unsure as to how to grow a company from scratch. And I just always said to myself, after being scammed for so many different programs and all the rest that are crap, I just said to myself, whenever I actually figure it out, I'm going to share this with people, you know, so see if they can get similar results and better results maybe. And so, you know, there's a mixture of we wanted to help people with also that we saw a massive business opportunity to improve quality of education while also being able to service sellers with multiple things like our services and our software, because nobody has the services and software that we offer.
You mentioned Robert has 17 years of experience. If that's online, was he slinging stuff on AOL and eBay back in those days? Because that's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's primarily where I started from, because I actually worked for the family business whenever I came out of school, similar to Stephen, with not too many qualifications, but slipped straight into the family business. And we were a wholesaler of electronic accessories. And it was around the 1997, whenever I convinced my father actually to put a lot of money in them days behind a bespoke website, because there was no off-the-shelf packages or anything like that, or any marketplaces for that matter, certainly not in the UK. And we built our own bespoke website to actually sell the items that we had and had access to from all of our different distribution methods. And it went very, very well. You know, we actually made back in profit all of the money that we spent out within 6 months. So, you know, obviously the older head and my father was very pleased with that and everything else. But then the marketplaces kind of came to town, and I thought that these guys are massive players here, you know, the likes of eBay and Amazon, and they could very easily take over this this online space here of e-commerce, which, you know, one could say that they have done that. So we simply moved across onto the marketplaces. We kept the website, but it did die down a little bit. We moved over onto the marketplaces and again continued to do very well. But what we saw was that there was an opportunity here, not just to sell what we had access to, but to bring in the imported side of things, because stuff that was being manufactured in the UK or being sold through distribution mechanisms in the UK was a lot more expensive per se on a cost price basis than what it would have been to actually import it. So we started to import similar items than what we had already done. And again, that gave us a big lift as well in that particular space. Then we took it one stage further by saying, well, look, if we can import the products that we do have access to, what about importing something completely different, something not in our space, not anything we've had any experience in before, just something that we have found that there's a demand for. So we did that, and that was really the turning point of when myself and Stephen sort of kind of got together a couple of years after that, and we took that basis sort of forward and started systemizing the approach around the way we sold and what we sold, and here we are today.
Cool. That's impressive. I don't think people realize how hard it was to make a website back in 97.
Oh, it took us, I think, about 9 to 12 months to get the whole thing tied up together, because it was
hand-coded as well.
Yeah, hand-coded. And it was actually fairly revolutionary in them days, because we had a changing product lineup and a changing price structure. I have to say to the guys that I did not want to keep hard coding each and every page every time we had a price update. So they actually built it. It was fairly one of a kind back in those days. But would you believe it was actually built on MS Access, which just seems crazy now. But it gave us the functionality to do that. And it was a great project, but it took a long, long time.
I can imagine. Back to the marketplace superheroes. You mentioned getting the right clients. How do you drive traffic, the right traffic to this website?
So at the moment, we just use two distinct methods. We use Facebook advertising. We also use affiliate marketing. We've got a lot of big affiliates now driving traffic for us. And also doing things like this podcast, you know, we're going to do it yourself, have been great for getting the message out to an audience. So they're the two main methods at the moment. We're going to be scaling up our paid traffic in the next couple of months. We have an agency we're going to be working with to take that on, moving into even things like direct mail as well over time. With the affiliate marketing, then that's something from basically building connections and then building a network in the industry that's allowed us to connect with some of the big players and drive a lot of sales on a particular launch with these people. And I would imagine in the not too distant future, we'll go on a sort of a link building, content marketing style method of promotion as we go forward and as we start to sell other products in this under this brand as well, not only just our two flagship courses.
I think as well, we've utilized the webinars very well in terms of providing, you know, real in-depth education in those webinars rather than, you know, the old fashioned sales pitch. You know, we obviously do sell on the webinars, but it's very much more educational based, and then we allow the consumer to make up their mind.
Yeah, and we do a lot of extra stuff, like we do off the cuff webinars and answer questions and that kind of stuff as well.
So the Facebook ads are driving people to the webinars and then you sell them on the course, or is it the funnel?
Yeah, it's very simple. I don't believe in like these really complicated funnels. Like there will come a time when we have to bring in some slightly more complicated funnels in this business. But for the time being, I believe in keeping things very simple. Another sort of mentor of mine, Ryan Lee, who I talked about earlier on, he's a proponent as well of keeping things simple and actually serving your tribe as opposed to, you know, we've talked to a lot of guys before about these things like, you know, product mixers, and you mix the product around and you keep pitching the front end and then you sell up into higher back end promotions. And really the funnel we look at now at the moment is we bring in customer acquisition from the webinars, and then we focus on further serving that audience through a continuity offer, as we talked about, as well as specific niche products that solve pain points that are outside the scope of our main courses.
How do you target the people with the Facebook ads? Because you could easily lose money by having Indians click on them, just, you know, because there's been a big...
I mean, that's the thing, you know, the big thing, lesson we've learned is don't try and do everything. So we have a Facebook advertising guy who works with us, and he takes care of the advertising. We work with him to work on the funnel. We now have a staff copywriter as well who works with our advertiser. And we work to make sure that we get an acceptable acquisition cost. And we also then are making sure that we are maximizing our profit in a promotion.
Very cool. Can you walk me through the process a little bit of how you found those affiliates? Because it's, I think, a little tougher than it just sounds, finding affiliates. It's not that simple.
No, well, the worst thing you can do is just email people. I mean, that's for sure. The best way to find affiliates is, well, I think the first thing I would say before you find an affiliate, you've got to have a product that is in demand. And this is something, one of our core things we teach in our course, and it's applicable to any business, which is, you know, you want to fulfill demand, don't try and create demand. So no doubt about it, there's an inherent demand at the moment for Amazon-related education, which is great. Also, we have a differentiator in that we are the only course that talks about how to sell in multiple countries. Nobody else talks about it. Nobody else does it. Other people sell in multiple countries, just nobody else has any credibility that can teach it. So when you have those elements, a hungry audience, a product that's differentiated and unique, then when you go to events and stuff like that, you know, the thing I would say before you even talk to an affiliate is you've got to have an offer that is proven with cold to tepid traffic, not necessarily warm or hot traffic or whatever, that you've actually tested your offer before. You can show with actual figures how much you've brought in, how much your acquisition cost was, how much it cost you to get a customer, and how much, you know, how long it took, and all these different metrics. So when you have all that information at hand and you go to events, you start getting to know people, and you don't go there with this sole purpose of getting an affiliate or whatever. You go there to get to know people in your industry, and you get to know people in your industry and you have an offer that's working. Well, then you start talking about your offer, and then all of a sudden the people that you speak to go, oh, I know somebody who promotes this kind of stuff. And then they connect you whenever you build a good relationship with that person. And really, that's how to get the best affiliates. You've got to build strong relationships and have a great offer.
I see. So a lot of in-person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest affiliates we've ever had So far, we have got them from an initial person-to-person contact where we actually put our money down, flew to an event and got to know people. And like I say, never went with the intention of, oh, I want to get, you know, 10 affiliates today, because I don't think that works. I think that desperation will, you know, be smelled by everyone around you.
I think as well, you know, because we've had to fly from Europe and, you know, primarily all of these events are in the continental US. So we've gone multiple times to the US. We've sat down with many different people. And as Stephen says, it's about building that relationship. And we've certainly done that so many times that now it does become a wee bit like second nature, but it's great. You know, it becomes almost like a social thing, a community, and you can then talk to people on our level as well.
Yeah, and then also I'd say, Tom, like once you actually start selling with affiliates, more affiliates start looking for you then, because you've got an offer that works. They know that your offer will work for their audience, and then they'll come running to you, which has happened to us.
Very cool. So when you throw people into this online course, I can see there's a lot of challenges. People don't take action. People mm-hmm. don't do what they're supposed to. Like, what are you doing to, I guess, create as much success as you possibly can with the people you have in the courses?
We've done quite a number of different things, actually. You know, one of our strengths is actually inside our group and our community in terms of our Facebook group, because myself and Stephen are almost permanently in there. You know, we answer questions very, very quickly. So if somebody does have an issue, a problem, and those things crop up, you know, somebody maybe doesn't understand something or they just don't get it, we want to come in and answer that question as quickly as possible. Sometimes text is not, you know, it's not good enough to answer that question. So we take a number of these questions. We have developed what we called office hours videos, which is myself and Stephen in our office talking about some person's issue, because if one person has that particular issue, there's a good chance that a few other people will have it as well. So we decided to record videos on how to solve that problem, how to get over that particular hurdle. And then we go one step further in that we have webinars solely for the purpose of like education on certain topics with inside the course, and also to bring in things like, you know, workshops that we've done in terms of product research and things that are, you know, they're parts of the course that require a wee bit of, you know, intuition and a wee bit of manual work. So we've worked the workshop angle for them people to be able to get over those hurdles.
Yeah, basically give it down. And you know, I mean, also we're going to do more things in the future as well to help with this, like a buddy up system or something like that. We're working on a lot of different things, and I guess one of the other big things we did was we were very quick to hire what we call a customer ambassador. By the way, we'll send you an invoice at the end of this, time it'll only be 1 or 2,000, all right?
Right.
Our customer ambassador Tara has been fantastic. We hired her early on because she was actually a member of the course. Most people we hire now actually were members of the course originally and are still growing their Amazon businesses. But the reason we hired them is because they know the system. So with Tara, she's been great for, you know, getting on and speaking to people. She'll do a Skype call with somebody if they're really stuck. And that's been pretty important as well.
So another side of it, what challenges do you see that are stopping people from succeeding in your course?
Well, I mean, you know, most challenges are self-imposed, it's simple as that. And we do a lot of work to help people with that. And one of the biggest problems with people now really is that they don't understand what investing actually means. Because we're told by all these different guru guys and whatever, like, to invest in yourself. And this is so important, to invest in yourself. And it is. We invest in ourselves every month. We spend a lot of money on self-education. But the thing about it is that when you've been consuming all your life, you've just been spending money, you've never actually invested in something and seen a return come back before, the fear of actually putting money down is the biggest problem, because people don't understand that when you invest in an asset, when there's actual money flowing to something, making it an asset, that's how you actually start building wealth. Whereas most of us who work in jobs, I was definitely like this a few years back, because one of my biggest problems, We have that, you know, learned helplessness thing where we're just so used to getting a salary and we're terrified of taking a quote unquote risk. And also people's idea of risk is totally wrong. Like, I mean, the stuff that your parents teach you about risk and whatever is kind of nonsense. And, you know, just to give you an example of what we do with that in some of our sales webinars, we actually show people the monetary difference in saving your money for 3 years and not touching it against putting it into like a bond or an index fund for 3 years and not touching it. And the third option is investing that money in a physical product and actually leaving it in there for 3 years, assuming it'll sell out every 9 months. And the differences there in what happens to that money are shocking. And people can see very quickly that, you know, saving as a wealth building strategy is, it's important to save money. I mean, I save money, but it's only part of the equation of actually making money. And if you want to build a business, like, you can't just save your money. It's like one of my parents, one of their biggest issues. I mean, my mom knows I say this to her and she laughs when I say it, but it's true, is that a lot of people are like this too, certainly in Ireland as well, I'm sure all over the world, where their one strategy to get what they want is to cut back as opposed to increase. So these are the main problems people have. They're not used to these different mindsets that took me a while to learn whenever I started, and Robert started sort of initially kind of teaching me this stuff. So that's the biggest problem, I would say.
That's interesting. And I see that too. The same person that has no problems taking a loan and buying a couch for $4,000.
Yeah.
Will have a huge problem paying $1,000 to actually buy product that they can sell and learn yeah. something. It's
well, that's, you know, that all comes down to societal, you know, kind of brainwashing really and whatever. And that, you know, certainly a car you would say is an asset. But if you actually look at the economic definition of these things, like an asset is something where money flows to something. So if you have a car and you're a taxi driver, it's not a great business to be in, but at the same time, your car is now an asset, or your car isn't an asset, if not because it's an RRD, a rust, rot, and depreciating item that basically loses value all the time. Now, sure enough, you get value from driving the car, but it's not something that you're going to make money from. And it's the same thing as people buying houses. Like, we've all read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Kiyosaki, and he talks about that. He was one of the first people to say your house isn't an asset. Your house is an asset if you have a if you loan against it as well, I guess that's another thing. Or if you plan to sell your house, it's also an asset. But if you never sell the thing, it's not an asset because money doesn't flow to the entity. It flows away from it.
How much do you really need to invest to start messing around with Amazon?
Yeah, we always tell people $1,000 to $3,000 will get you started. And that'll get you maybe one or two products, depending on what we call the MOQ, the minimum order quantity. And then we just tell people to start small and scale up. Like, one of the biggest things we tell people not to do is don't jump in with 10 or 20K because you need to learn how the whole thing works. You need to have the experience of actually negotiating with Chinese suppliers before you jump in and spend 20 grand on something.
So if you say $1,000, and this is just, you know, from the top of your head, what would be the breakdown of the cost of that $1,000? Like, what percentage goes where?
Yeah, so if you're looking at $1,000, that'd be sort of the entry level, the very bottom basic. You'd be looking somewhere in the region of $750 towards the actual product itself, and about $250 to actually shipping that particular item. And that kind of goes pro rata as you go up. So if you were at $2,000 of an investment, you'd be looking at about $1,500 for the actual product, and the rest for the shipping of the item to get it from its destination, or sorry, from its origin to its destination.
So does that include getting the sample, the customs, the shipping, all of that? That's kind of the breakdown, or is that something separate?
Yeah, customs would be included in that. I mean, customs is not a big percentage value. And
it depends on the product.
It does depend on the product. I mean, you've got duty rates and things like that. But the products that we would say to people to buy are very straightforward, and therefore they're not going to carry, you know, chaotic duty rates. They're all fairly standard between 3 points and 7 points. And in terms of the sample, you know, that's really a very early on cost that you can probably assume is going to be about $40 to $50.
Since you guys have been in the Amazon game for a while, and things are changing constantly with Amazon, like, what do you see the trends that are happening in the marketplace?
Well, this is a good one, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two sides to this, and there's a negative side, which I'll let Stephen cover, and there's a positive side. The positive side is very much that Amazon is expanding. You know, it's constantly expanding into more and more countries, more and more continents. And a lot of people are stuck in what we would call domestic US market. You know, it's the only market that they sell in. They can't seem to branch out and move into Europe or anywhere else. And that's where we would say the real growth is for you, especially if you've got items that are currently selling and you have, you know, you've got your factories lined up. You've already, you know, perfected the process of getting that product into one country. Well, then it's damn easy to get it into the other country as well. And I mean, from a negative point of view, you know, Amazon are changing their rules, but the nice thing is, as Stephen will tell us, is that it really hasn't affected us.
No, see, that's the thing. Most people, they're so obsessed with tactical maneuvers as opposed to being more strategic. And this is something that Ramit Sethi talks about a lot with I'll Teach You to Be Rich. I'm a big fan of Ramit's for a number of reasons, but one of the big things he talks about is exactly what I'm about to say, is that everybody's that's starting out trying to build an online business, let's say in an information style business, they're always concerned with, you know, funnels and what about this tripwire and what about this multi-email paired email sequence and all this kind of stuff. And similarly with Amazon, people are concerned about, like, how many reviews can I get? How do I get more backlinks to my listing? How do I do? All these tactical things. And the reality is, like, in our opinion, nothing about our business has changed with these so-called changes with Amazon, because we follow the terms of service that Amazon lay out. And because of that, we don't have any real issues, because once you follow terms of service, there's no particular problem with how you sell or your mechanism of selling. And then it comes back to strategy. Like I mentioned, most people are trying to just all copy each other. Basically, they all want to do this home run in one go, as opposed to do what we call about, which is multiple base hits, where you get onto the first base, i.e. you sell a few units a day, and then that product may over time become a product that sells 40, 50, 100 a day. We certainly have some of those products. But also, you know, we talk about something called a rule of five, which is really how we think about this business and how we tell our members to think about this business. And what that states is, you got five products selling in five countries at an average of 5 units sold per product per day per country. A little bit of a mouthful. An average net profit of $5 a unit, just to get us to the rule of five. Then over a 30-day month on average, that actually can bring in before tax profit, so net-ish profit, of about $18,750 or $225,000 over a 12-month period. That, you know, saying nothing changes, it goes the very same way each month. And a lot of people sort of think to themselves, when we talk about that, that's kind of crazy because it's only five products. But the difference is we sell in multiple countries and we take advantage of the growth that Amazon are bringing in. So we're strategic. We follow Amazon in that we open up in a lot of the countries that they're in. We're not in every country right now because some of those countries can be difficult to sell in from a business, you know, setup point of view, like India and Japan.
Yeah, I was gonna say Japan is probably really difficult. I had a friend looking at supplements and selling supplements from the US to Japan, no problems. But trying to set up a company in Japan and sell supplements, oh boy.
Yeah, and see, that's another thing. Like, things like supplements, you know, there was a gold rush on supplements, you know, for the last couple of years, really. And that gold rush is drying up now because everybody just copied each other. And some people did very well. I'm not going to say they didn't. Some people made a lot of money from that. And some people now keep jumping into supplements because they think that that's the thing that's going to make them, like, that's the one thing that's going to make them all this money. And we go the other way, really, Tom. You know, the whole zigging when everybody else is zagging and whatever. We sell boring products, passionless products that we really, not going to say we don't care about, because we care about the quality of the product, of course, but we have no passion connected to our products whatsoever. We don't say, like, I just love selling, you know, plastic shoe boxes. That is just so beautiful. We don't care about that. We always say we treat this business is almost like a mini stock market where we're monitoring what's in demand and what we can actually come in with and offer a better version of that product, a more optimized version with extra additional bonuses and that kind of stuff. And we can come in at a very competitive price and make a healthy profit margin. I mean, a year or two ago, there was a story in, I think it was Forbes ran it or somewhere, or maybe Inc. And it was about this guy called the Amazon Whisperer. You might have seen it. And that guy actually follows a lot of what we do. He's just a lot bigger than us. He's got a lot more capital to invest. And essentially, if you check out that story, he talks about how he just looks at reviews of products and he just comes out with better versions. He doesn't get involved in all these tactics that all these other guys are talking about. So that's how we look at it.
So if someone does use the rule of five and they come up with the net profit of 18,750 or whatever number you said, how much of that is actually what they get to keep?
That is their net profit. That's not sales or revenue that other people talk about. That's net profit.
Yeah, so we work on two distinct profit percentage indicators. One is profit on investment, which is, well, Robert will explain these, and profit on return, but I'll let Robert explain them because he's the numbers guy.
Yeah, well, profit on investment, or we would call POI, it's quite similar to ROI, but the calculation's not exactly the same because of the style of business that Amazon is, because there is some costings inside Amazon that you've got to remove. But profit on investment basically tells you back as a percentage what your net profit will be based on the cost price of your item. And in our course, we go for 100% plus profit on investment. So that translates basically to, if we've paid $5 for an item, then we wish to make at least $5 on the item. So we wish to double our money. Profit on return is another indicator which allows us to work out very quickly what we've made profit-wise on a month sales. So we go for a 30% plus profit on return, or POR. So therefore we can calculate very quickly if we have turned over $200,000 in a month, we know that 30% of that is profit, so it's $60,000.
Yeah, and that is before tax.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, because I was thinking that a part of it needs to go to pay for the product, and a part of it needs to actually go pay Amazon, because, you know,
we take care of that, you know, before we look at the actual profit at the end. But also, you're going to see a lot of people, Tom, you know, they say things like, I'm making 65%. And we always say, what does that mean? What's 65% of what? And most people can't answer that because they don't actually know. They don't understand the different costs that are in this business. They don't understand how to calculate a lot of these things. And they definitely don't understand how to forecast their sales. So you'll find a lot of people, they're not making the POI or POR that they think they're making. And also, a lot of them keep running out of stock, us included, back a few years back, when we didn't have the software we've developed and things like that and the processes, because, you know, whenever you're importing products, it's not as easy as like, oh, I sold 100 this month. Well, I just need to order another 100 and they'll be in, and sure, I'll be back in stock again. It's not as easy as that. Because we import via sea from China, we have to have stock for a 3-month period of time, because from the time of order to the time of delivery, that's roughly how long it takes to get something all the way through over the sea from China into stock over in the US or the UK, wherever we're selling from.
Yeah, one of the biggest triggers to rank on Amazon are reviews. Now, when someone used to come up with a product, it was really easy to get those reviews. But now Amazon's been, I guess, creating havoc in that hole.
No. Amazon aren't creating havoc. It is the sellers who are going out and getting and badgering people for reviews. We would say they are the ones who are creating havoc, because Amazon's terms of service are really, really clear. And most people, you look at it like all the stuff that's been going on for a long time, people would say things like, oh, it's easy to rank a product on Amazon, but it's not quite like SEO or anything like that. Like, Amazon never want people to artificially inflate sales. And that is what was going on for the last few years with Amazon, which, as you see now in their TOS, it actually says you're not allowed to artificially inflate the sales rank on Amazon. You're also not allowed to just bring a whole bunch of reviews in that are not genuine reviews, because Amazon already asks a customer to place a review. Now, there are certain tools out there that are pretty legit that you as a company can ask somebody for a review. But the days of just like getting family members and everyone around you to put on reviews, you got to look at that and say there's no integrity to doing that, because essentially you're just asking everyone around you here put up a review on that. Like, they're not going to put an honest review. They're going to put up a biased review that you ask them to put up. So we never got involved in that stuff, Tom, because we don't believe that it's good business practice. And also, Amazon state clearly that it's not what they want you to do. I mean, the reality is, if Amazon wanted you to do that, they'd tell you to do it, because they want you to sell more products on their platform. They want to make more money. They want to own the market. So if they're not telling you to do that, you got to ask yourself, why are they not telling me to do that? That's just their position on it.
But also, I mean, you know, Amazon is strictly loyal to its customers. And by having these fake reviews, these non-honest reviews, they are taking away the integrity of a particular product on Amazon. So whenever their customer goes on, buys it, yeah, and it doesn't fulfill that expectation that's being created by all these fake reviews, that customer is going to be unhappy. And that customer is going to be unhappy at Amazon. And yeah, Amazon does not want that. And realistically, you know, these reviews that people have done in the past, it can actually even hurt the seller. It can be a real on goal, as we call it in soccer, because if you've actually hyperinflated those reviews and tried to rush sales the early part, you would then have to start actually ordering your stock based on this new false plateau of sales that you have now created, these sales levels. And whenever it gets found out that your product's not quite as good as what these reviews are said, you could end up having that listing removed, the sales might drop off, or a number of other things. You're going to be stuck with stock in production, stock in transit, stock in your warehouse. So sometimes it just doesn't pay off to play those games.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, the reality is, if you want to drive traffic yourself to your own listings, the best way to do that really is to don't try and put more money in Amazon's pockets. If you're putting money down, do it in your own platform, because at least then you can do whatever the hell you want. You're entitled to inflate sales as much as you want because it's your own platform. Obviously, fake reviews are biased reviews are not something even on your own site that is really that great. But I mean, at the end of the day, paying money to artificially rank and all these different things on Amazon is just, this is what we were talking about earlier. This is what has caused a lot of sellers to say, well, things have really changed on Amazon. And it's like, well, they haven't really. What's happened is sellers have changed how they did things. They've not followed the rules. And Amazon have had to obviously respond to that and say, well, this is what we're going to now have to do, because you guys can't be trusted to not do this. So that's really the state of affairs.
And I think as well, you know, like, sellers want that traffic that Amazon provides.
Of course.
But they don't want to play by the rules. You know, if they don't want to play by the rules and they want to do it their own way, go and get your own website and try driving the traffic that Amazon can drive to that website.
Yeah,
it's going to cost.
It sounds like we work for Amazon, but we don't.
I agree with you guys on a lot of this, but I still feel like it's a chicken and egg problem, because when you start off and you bring a product in and you want to compete, you are competing with the same product with people that have reviews.
That all depends on whether you've copycatted the exact same item. And it kind of throws back to the idea that Stephen brought up about, you know, fulfilling demand and not trying to create it. That's really where our philosophy starts from. But
if that was true as well, Robert, we would not have a business that does 1.6 million a year in sales.
That's
if that was true, because we don't do any of that stuff. So if we don't do any of that stuff, you know, how did we make sales then? That's always what I say.
Yeah, you know.
Someone could say that you guys have done a lot of this stuff before the rules changed and just got lucky.
Yeah, I know. People always say that. But reality is, we're launching products all the time. And I tell you, products always start slow on Amazon. And over time, they gain traction. And over time, they organically start to rank better. And if you've done your research correct and you've optimized your listing as well, you know, and you actually use the marketing, I'm not going to say principles, the marketing facilities, I guess,
yeah,
that are available on Amazon, you can rank. I mean, you can use sponsored products by Amazon. It's a great way to get yourself that boost when you're starting off. But if you go and you buy, say, a supplement or something like that, that's highly competitive, yeah, you're not going to sell. You're not going to be able to rank because you picked a product that's too saturated. That's what we say. That's always just how we see it.
I think as well, I would say that, you know, a number of our items that outsell other items in that particular category could have a tenth of the reviews on it. So we would definitely argue that we haven't done that.
Yeah, but no, that, look, that's just how we see it. And we just share what we've done. I would never say other people are wrong. I would just say that's just not the way we run this business. And I mean, our business keeps growing all the time. We're constantly adding new products. So I don't think it's fair to say, well, that's well for you guys. This is before the rules changed. But the rules have only changed in that you can't artificially rank sales. We never did that. So
yeah, I would also argue that the rules haven't changed, as you said. They've just been actually strictly enforced.
Yeah,
that's always been there.
Yeah.
Very cool. So if people want to reach out to you and then talk to you, where could they go?
Best place to go to is marketplacesuperheroes.com, and they can email us at support@marketplacesuperheroes.com. We really just bring everything through the support mail. Happily chat to anybody who wants to come through. We have a lot of free information that you can opt into on the site. And like I said, all you got to do is go to marketplacesuperheroes.com, follow the instructions, you'll get all that. And like I say, we do webinars pretty often. You can come on and you can hang out with us, ask us questions or whatever you want to do. And by all means, we're more than happy to take emails. We get emails all the time now, and love to talk about this stuff, Tom. You can tell we're passionate about it. We care about seeing people succeed. And the reality is, with a business like this, sure enough, it's getting more competitive. But if you're smart about it and you're prepared to expand internationally, which is not difficult whenever you follow along with what we do, okay, there's a little bit of investment at times, but it's completely possible to build a very successful business in a relatively short period of time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.